All right, so my talk is called Your Favorite Osmocom Related Productivity Tips and Tools. And I will do it like this, so I will share 5 tips myself, and afterwards it's your turn, the audience can present their favorite tips and tools. And yeah, here's a random XKCD I like. So let's do it. Here is number 5, CSS animation for dramatic effect. The first one, so probably this is obvious to some, but I find it just very useful and wanted to mention it here. You can SSH into a device and then run TCP dump there and pipe it directly into Wireshark. And I use this a lot. This is also in the Osmocom wiki now. Just a pretty simple thing, but it helps a lot, and you can just filter out SSH traffic, and then you get it nicely in Wireshark directly. Moving on to number 4, finding TTCN3 regressions systematically. So we run TTCN3 on the Osmocom Jenkins, and sometimes it happens that the graph looks like this, which is bad, because it means that suddenly everything is failing. So we have on this one, we have like 300 tests and all of them are passing, and then the red thing indicates that suddenly they don't pass anymore. So we want to figure out what went wrong. And so there's a couple of Git repositories that could be the cause of this. First we have for tests and the test configurations, we have Osmo TTCN3 hacks and docker-playground.git. And then we have the Osmocom programs and libraries. And this is the subject under test, for example, Osmo BSC Git, and all the dependencies, the whole tree and the dependencies of the dependencies, up until libosmocore, and there's libosmo CCP, and so on. There's a whole lot of them. And then we have the Osmocom programs that are started inside the test suite, so they can also cause regressions. And these are, for example, in osmocombb.git, wordfy, and fake-trx. Yeah, so if you have no clue why it is failing at all, you might want to just start reproducing it in the background while you analyze it further. And it's a good idea to reproduce the error locally and also to reproduce the last known working state so you can narrow it down. So narrowing it down, while doing that, it makes sense to look at what exactly is failing. So for all the Osmocom programs, we run 2 types. We run the nightly repository, which just takes master of everything, of all the Git repositories. And then we have the latest tests, which run the latest stable release. And you can look if only one of them is failing or both of them are failing. And if both are failing, then it's probably a regression in the tests or test configurations. And if just nightly is failing, then it's probably a regression in the subject and a test or in the dependencies. And if it is only latest, then it might be a change in the test expectations. And this could be that it's an intentional thing that is not working anymore on latest. So this means if the test was wrong and the test is now fixed, and it just indicates that, okay, on latest this is just wrong behavior, but on master we have the correct behavior, then this is intentional. But it could also be that we started testing something extra in the test, so we had this lately, there we started testing in the test suite that some statistics arrive at the end of the test, and latest just didn't do this, but this didn't mean that the behavior was wrong, it just meant that we had a different expectation that we didn't really need on latest. So for this, a code path needed to be added that checks if it's latest or not. And only in the case that we test master, it should try to get these statistics. So this is the stuff that can happen. And of course, you also need to look at the date when it has last passed. So if you look again at this graph, there's a bunch of numbers, and each of them represents a day, and you can look up at which day it was known to be passing correctly. And by the way, of course, all tests can fail like here, more or less, but also this is useful when you just want to track down one test that is failing. Right. Yeah, then you should of course look at the Git commits, figure out if there's anything obvious that could have caused this of all the repositories mentioned. And if you find something, then just verify locally if that fixes it. And if that's the case, then great job, then you can fix it or create an issue about it. And if not, then you need to continue your search. You can make a list of repositories that could have caused this. I like to look at the file all.deps and osmodev.git because it lists all the dependencies, so what depends on what in Osmocom. And yeah, what I did once actually is there were a lot of them and I really had no clue which of them causes the regression, so I added numbers how likely it is I think which one caused it and then tried to figure it out from there. Yeah, you need, as I said, you need to reproduce it locally with the failing configuration and then you can revert one repository at a time to this day where it was known to be working until you find the error. And sometimes it could in theory even happen, luckily this wasn't the case yet, that multiple repositories introduce multiple errors at the same time and then you just need to play with it and revert some of them and then see which ones really are the cause, which repositories on this level. And when you have done that, then you can do a git bisect to find the single commit that really caused the issue. And there's also this osmo bisect.git.sh script in Docker Playground Git by Daniel, where you can run git bisect on a TTCN3 test suite and yeah, then figure it out from there, basically. And in the end, if you did all that, you should know exactly which commit broke it, and you should be able to reproduce both the broken and fixed state locally. And then you can fix it yourself or create an issue and point to the person who broke it and tell them to please fix it. Okay, then we have number three. This is running CI scripts locally. So when you submit a patch to Garrett, we run a bunch of checks. And yeah, some of them may fail, looks like this then, and what you can either do is just fix it locally and submit it again and wait for Jenkins to test it and do it like this, which is also fine, but maybe you want to do it faster and then you want to run the CI scripts locally so you have a short way to test it so it's faster basically. And the easiest one of them is running the linter, so when the linter fails, it will tell you this, please fix the linting errors, and there are more information in this wiki page. And there it says how you can install the linter locally, and it's quite easy. You just clone this Osmo CI Git repository and go into any of the Osmocom Git repositories and then run the lint script. And you can make like a shell alias for this or put it in your path or something. So this will run the linter and it looks like this, like in Jenkins, and it says, okay, oh, you forgot one space before the parent sees this, or the pointer should be like have the space in our coding thing, which is based on the Linux kernel's check patch, by the way, so we have our own fork and configuration for that. Okay. Then we have a pre-commit hook also, so because this linter script runs really fast, you can just put it in your pre-commit hook and then it runs with each git commit you make and then you don't ever need to go back basically and fix it afterwards. So I also use this on my PC. And you can also skip the linter in case you just don't want to deal with it currently, you just use git commit --- no verify it and it doesn't do that. Also about the linter, you can use a project-specific config. It's also in this wiki page if you want to look it up later. So you create a checkpatch.conf in the top directory of the Git repository, and then you can exclude certain files from being checked, or you can disable some rules. And we do this, for example, when we have generated code or when we have code imported from other Git repositories which just don't follow our coding guidelines and where it doesn't make sense to adjust everything because then you create a huge diff and it's harder to compare with the original. Yeah, next up we have Linux distribution packages. So whenever you submit a commit to Garrett. It also builds for Debian 10 and 12 currently. And if that fails, you can also reproduce it locally like this. You also clone the Osmo CI repository and run this Garrett bin packages script. And actually, this was a lot more complicated before I made the slides, but I realized it would be nice if it was just one command like this. And now that's possible. And yeah, that's just what you do. And then it either fails or it works. Uses the current Git repository to build this binary package. Next, we have the contrib/jenkins.sh scripts. These are the most complicated ones to run locally. But how it works is you find the command in the Garrett verifications YML file, which is the definition of the Jenkins job in osmoci.git. And it might look like the following. And as you can see here, there are a couple of variables like docker run ccache, docker img, timeout cmd, and you look them up. They are in the same file, and then you can build a shell script where you just replace them, and then you can run it exactly the same as on Jenkins. And I've used this a lot of times to make sure it's like, yeah, working the same as on Jenkins, and then so I can really reproduce the failure and figure out why it's not working and then fix it. And also there's another wiki page that describes this in detail. Now we go to number two. So yeah, Zach kind of mentioned this before. You can use shell aliases. It's also very kind of obvious, but it saves so much time to just be able to quickly enter a couple of directories. So I have like a huge list in my C# config, and I use this for all the OsmoCon programs. I have one for Open5JS. I have one for my hobby projects. It's very useful. And I even made a short function that helps me add a new alias. So when I'm in a random directory and I think, oh, I could in the future like refer to this as trxcon, then I just create alias, trxcon. And then later when I go back, I just type trxcon, and I don't even need to remember that it was in OsmoConBB in this case. It's just this short function. It writes this alias and cd line into my C# config, in my local config, like C shell rc.local, this one, prints that it created the alias and sources the file again, so I can immediately use it. And now we get to the number one tip that made me most productive. Yeah?
No, it's like for the aliases, for the directories, wanted to add like essentially as a feature, it's called cdable var. So if you turn that on and set the known shell variable to a path, then you can say cd tilde variable name, and it goes into that directory. So you don't even like need that plumbing for extra aliases if you're okay to live with cd tilde whatever.
Oh, that's
that
interesting.
Also has the effect that in your prompt it will show it as tilde variable name.
Ah, nice. Okay, so there was this comment that you can apparently in C# use variables, which then go with tilde and then the name. So I need to look into that. That might be even shorter. That's good to know.
Cdable paths.
Cdable paths. Okay, thanks. Okay, now back to the number one thing that made me most productive as OsmoCom developer. And it's using OsmoDev, which Niels wrote. And it's a top-level makefile and a couple of development tools, and it helps you to, instead of figuring out all the dependencies on your own, you can just generate this top-level makefile with this genmake.py command. It's all in the README. And then you can run make and then any OsmoCon program, and it will automatically figure out all the dependencies and build them for you, and also build them from source, so you can make modifications to them as you need it. And it even has some nice features that it's very optimized, so it figures out which files you modified, and only if you modified files of a given project, only then it will run make inside that project. So it will skip the complete make if you didn't touch any of the files in there. So it's very fast, and I use it all the time. And it even has these nice configure options where you can say, okay, this time in my gen make file, I want for all project where it makes sense, like enable W error, which I do by default, or you want to build the manuals, or enable IU, or enable sanitize, and these things. And it also supports C cache, which makes it quite fast. So yeah, it's quite nice. And more features. So it can also run the Osmocom network and automatically run TCP dump. And usually this is the core network and the BSC, so there's a whole net directory with a README file where you can look this up. And there are a couple of helper scripts for running TTCN3 test suites and Osmocom components locally. So there's a lightweight version that I think Vadim made in TTCN3/tmux. And there's also a more bloated one, which I made, which runs the TTCN3 test suites exactly the same way we run it on jenkins.osmocom.org, which means Docker is involved and it builds a lot of containers, but then you get exactly the same result, which is the benefit. This is in the TTCN3/TTCN3.sh script. And yeah, I did a whole talk about this also earlier if you want to learn more about this. One more thing it has, the Git tool, which just runs Git commands in all the Git repositories. So when you run status, then you see a nice overview of the current branch that is checked out and if it is dirty or not, which is indicated by mods, and so on. And you can use this to quickly pull all repositories, for example. That's what I mostly use it for. Okay. I also have a bonus tip, which is checking out a patch tree from Garrett. So sometimes I get this comment, yeah, can you push your Git tree somewhere so I can look at it in my thing? And it's actually, you can actually just grab it from Garrett. And I guess not everybody knows this. So there are two ways. One is clicking two buttons like this three dots and then download patch. And then you get this big window with 100 commands, but you only need the first one. You again click on copy and then you paste it in your terminal and then you get the whole branch from Garrett with all the patches. And so even if multiple were submitted, you get the whole tree basically. And there's another way with one command. This is called git review download, GRD, and it's part of Osmo dev git. And yeah, it's just go into the Osmocom project and then type in GRD and then the patch set number. And then it figures automatically out which one is the latest patch set version. So if you think about it in Garrett, you can submit multiple versions. And then it checks it out into a branch, and then there you have it. So I also use this a lot. Yeah, and these are my top five. Thank you for listening. And now let's pass it around. So what are your favorite Osmocom-related productivity tips and tools? I want to present, yeah?
Yeah.
Sure.
So my favorite productivity tip when I need to do something OBS related is basically asking Oliver to do it because he's doing it like 10 times faster than me. So.
Great tip.
Ah, he can scale up to 10 people, so it's fine. Yeah.
I just quickly, because you mentioned it's very happy at the moment because I thought, oh, I could talk about this or that, and then you already included the little scripts that I created at some time. Now I see them again. It's quite nice. So just because you mentioned Osmo Dev, in Osmo Dev we build in separate source and make trees. Just a tiny trick that also, since you mentioned the aliases or the seedable variables, this little contraption here is something that just replaces source for make in the path. And let me quickly get my hands free. Just, it's so simple. And it's like, I have one thing that always takes me to the source tree. And just one example quickly, if I'm here in something and something is failing, then I have this little thing that just takes me to the make one and back. So what I do is just make update expectations and then see what happened and then just go back and forth between source and make. I mean, it's simple, but it's so quick with this little script. You already mentioned the pulling this, the patches. You already mentioned Osmo Dev. What else? the remote Wireshark also. Yeah, I'm actually out of tips already.
One aside for the CD thing, like it's at least Satchel has it built in. If you call CD with two arguments, it does a replace of the first word with the second word in the current path. So if you say CD source make, it will replace source with make in your current path.
Quick question, is it more than one character of typing?
No, I mean, your alias is still, but I mean, it's more generic. So if you have the problem, like you want to change in a path that is mostly similar, but some top level directory is different, that's a general thing. And would also probably make your alias shorter if you would use
and
it.
And for completeness, we should also mention the CD minus. Maybe not always everyone knows that it skips back and forth between the last two directories.
Can also do minus two, minus three.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Of course.
Wow.
Yeah, I would like to know something, but there's no urgency. I can wait. Somebody. Some comment to Niels' stuff, or otherwise I would.
There's also git checkout minus.
There's also git checkout minus, is what has been commented on.
Oh yeah, I could also say that my git aliases, they also check whether there's some white space at the end of a line and then refuses to commit it. That's quite handy because often I, you know, accidentally commit white space, like following, like before the new line character you have some white space, and blocking myself from doing that is quite practical also.
But that should be a pre-commit hook.
Yeah. Some, I don't know how precisely I did it, but I don't know. Anyway, it's a long time ago.
So, yeah, let me just give me a second to set up the microphone.
I have a question for Oliver. Do you know git review, which is also like a subcommand where you can interface with Garrett, like download this change, upload this change, change this topic and everything?
Yeah.
Yes, I know about it, but I think you need to be logged in or something in order to download a patch. I'm not sure about this, so I found this other one easier.
So I just wanted to point out that my favorite productivity tool is actually a branch of the Osmo dev repository called wild/namespace tests. Because those basically are NetNS that are nested and can be used to basically run the TTN3 suits like for Osmo BTS in parallel instead of sequentially, so it takes like 5 minutes instead of 2 hours.
I have one more regarding TTCN3. I found the language server from Nokia, NTT is its name, quite nice for going back and forth the definitions. I haven't managed to get it to work with NVIM, but it works with VS Code. So actually use that for TTCN3 nowadays.
I forgot to mention one primary tool I use all the time is like the entire Osmo sources are in one source directory, and I use C tags across all the repositories to navigate with keyboard shortcuts using the arrow keys and the control key in VI. It's like very simple to go like in and out and navigate the alternatives without having to remember which source file what function was defined in. And another hotkey to update the C tags cache, and that makes navigating OsmoCom so much faster. C tags. And there's different variants, the exuberant C tags, and then we have another one, a fork that also supports TTCN3. Forget what it was, maybe I can add this in a minute.
Should we call TTC and three tags? No. No, yeah, it has.
Universal C tag.
I think it's called universal C types.
Yeah. Okay, good. Well, even more. Well, then.
Yeah, something when basically looking why TTCN3 test failed, something which may not seem that obvious is basically when you open the log file, which maybe spend like thousands of lines, is actually finding where the error started. And the tip is basically just to grep in the file for set verdict. I mean, it's just a simple thing, but yeah, it took a while to figure out.
So okay, I usually search
I just go for set verdict, but yeah, I mean.
For that.
Yeah, also for, I look for dynamic and then I find it, yeah.
Okay, so one thing I wanted to show is something called Dropwatch. I'm not sure how many people know it. It is a small tool. So quite often if you do something with networking in Linux, some packet gets dropped somewhere, but you have no clue why or where it gets dropped in the kernel. You know, might be a packet filter rule, might be that somehow some checksum error, a routing problem, a traffic shaper scheduler, or God knows what, an IPsec security policy or whatever. And there is a tool called Dropwatch, at least on Debian Unstable, it's just in the feed, so you can install it. I don't think it has many dependencies, if at all, so nothing exotic at least. It has this command line tool. The important part is that you always have to start it like this. For whatever reason, they didn't make it default. If you don't specify the -lkas, it doesn't do symbol resolution, and it's pretty useless just to get pointers. And like, yeah, okay, so why is this not the default? I don't know. But yeah, you always have to start this. And basically also, the idea, I mean, is that you can, the null lookup method. No? It's like, oh yes, we have no lookup. If you normally start it, so you get this message like initializing null lookup method. So the lookup method is what you specify with -l, and the only method that exists is the KAS method. So why on earth is it not default? I have no idea. So it's just to make it harder to use this tool. Now you get initializing allsimsdb. And then the other thing is also one command that I almost always need to do as a first command, to set the alert mode. So there's different alert mode. And the summary, I think, is pretty, I'm not sure what use cases it has. I never had a use case for it. So I set the alert mode to packet. And then I can start. And then I will get here all the packet filter, whatever failed. So here drop at, and where exactly in the kernel a packet was dropped, and what the IF index of the thing was, and the length of the packet, and so on. So I mean, these are, there's not, it's just net filter drops here, but if I had other causes for dropping packets right now, I would get all these messages. It tells me basically here the function name in which it was dropped plus the offset in the object code, so you can use whatever in GDB or whatever you want to actually check object dump or whatever to navigate to that or adder to line or whatever to get to which exact line in your code was dropping a packet in the kernel code. So. Yeah, I find that, I mean, we always wanted to have something back in the day when I was doing NetFilter development. It didn't exist back then, but now it exists. So I'm very happy that it exists. Yeah, so it's, as I said, it's very easy. You just have to keep in mind you do this -lkas. If you don't set the alert mode to packet, you can start it again. The alert mode apparently is persistent. Why does it? So apparently you can somehow not reset the alert mode or set alert mode summary. Yeah, so you get some counters, but it sort of what is init scratch end and why am I getting init scratch end instead of all the netfilter? I'm not sure. I mean, I didn't find it so useful, but here we see actually some other causes now. So in IP forwarding it was dropped, but yeah, with the set alert mode packet. Let's see if we also see something else but netfilter dropping a packet occasionally. I think not specified, that's also nice, yeah. A not specified reason, which was dropped in IP forward, okay. So yeah, the cause value is sort of something that needs to be explicitly specified by the code, and if the code doesn't specify why it has dropped the packet, you get this not specified, but still you get the address basically where it was dropped. So you can still check like what was the condition of dropping the packet there. Okay, that was it from my side.
Yeah, that was really helpful that you showed me the program. Like the migrant routing has always been kind of a black box thing.
Okay. Don't recall anything specific off my head that I would recommend apart from this. Let's just hand over the microphone back.
I just wanted to ask this, like, what's also important for me is like when we have a VTY test script that it can update in place automatically. Is everyone aware of that, or would it make sense to show this quickly?
Yes.
You don't know?
Yeah.
Do you want to go first? Let's see, where do we have VTY scripts? I don't know. So, what? Yeah, thanks. Okay, so here we have a VTY script. What is that? It feeds commands to our VTY and then it expects certain responses. This one is not a good example, actually. I'll just use it anyway. So, what if I wanted to, like in the beginning, verify something? Let's say I insert this. So now, do I like by hand type the entire result? No, of course not. I hope this will work now. So I updated the command that the VTY is supposed to run. And then I can quickly zoom to the tests directory and I can make the VTY test. I can even select a single one, this one. And then I can tell it to update in place. I hope it works, of course not. I recently did a reinstall. I didn't install the stuff yet, I guess. Osmo, what is it? Python? Do I have to make install now? That wasn't intended. I mean, maybe we can cut this short. So the point is it will run the VTY script and then update this script file in place. So when you go back in here, then you will see the actual output that resulted here, and then you can maybe select, okay, this is not important, so I only wanted to check this line, and that makes it very quick. So I never typed this stuff in or copied it anywhere. I wrote the VTY and just added these command steps and ran this update thing. This magic command is the important, like with this you can run VTY test manually and this passes the update option, so then it saves a lot of editing and going back and forth, and then combined with that is also the git add minus p, where you can like if lots of stuff changes and you only want one thing updated, you just say no for each patch chunk and just yes for the one that you want. And then you get checkout a dot, and then all the stuff you don't want is gone again. This is really very rapid. All right, Keith.
Just a small comment on that. That is what I usually do if, due to some update, the VTY output has changed or something like this. You can just rerun it this way, and then you do a git diff, and you see sort of what the update of the VTY test has changed, and then see if it makes sense or not. You know, because sometimes the output somehow has changed due to whatever reason, and it failed. And it's a rather quick way to update the expected output as a result. Okay. Handing over to Keith.
Thank you.
Okay, so this is a really quick and dirty way to so we have something like why am I looking at, why did it not mirror? Oh, because I didn't tell it to keep the configuration. Okay. So we have, stats interval reporter stats D, and a prefix for this particular PCU running in a place called Yukawa. And so that's really quick on the system running the core. You just install collect D and with pretty much default config. And then it's, where is it? Creates all these RRD files. And it creates a whole bunch of things called gauge and derive, which you can, if this collect D graph panel, which was my super quick and dirty fastest way to not do any Grafana setup and get bogged down in that for 6 years, was just to find some old software called collect D graph panel, which in fact will bring you these sections called gauge, which will give you a RRD graph of everything that is a gauge. As you can see, some of them are empty, some of them have data. And then there's, of course, the other one, which is derive. I can also make this bigger. So we have what's that? BTS0 decode errors. So the graph, collect graph D panel has a basic zoom and scroll on the RRD. It's not Grafana, but it's quick and dirty. So the thing is that all of these, all this data that you get in this derive thing, there's rather a lot of them. The page actually takes a really long time to load up. You might want to look up something like, EGPRS downlink MCS2. I'm not actually sure what we're looking at there. What are the units? But it's all there. If you did want to look at something like that, but because that's kind of annoying, the other quick and dirty hack there was to do something like this, now making public my terrible bash script skills. So a quick function to find out if an RRD file is empty or not, because if it's empty, then I'm not interested in it. And then I have you know, something like for, you know, for item in handover, location update, et cetera, I'm just basically making a symlink where in here, so I make a directory called sorry, what did we have there? Something like well, let's see, what was it? Say, you know, MS present for, and then I have symlinks to the, with the certain name to the RRD file, which is called derive, whatever it's called, the stats gauge PCU, blah, blah, blah. So that results in collect D graph panel just simply giving me, if I click on MS present, so then I get the graphs of that particular stat for each of the BTSs on this system. If I wanted to see, you know, PCU ratch, then I get these. So that's just the fastest and the most kind of painless way that I found to get a graphic representation of all the stats that we get out of the Osmo system. Would love to hear whatever anybody else does for that kind of stuff. You know, for example, if I want to see TCH usage, which, or, you know, what's the oh yeah, so this one is a Fairwave, so it has TCHF. The others are Sysmo BTSs, so they have TCHH. So that's one thing. Just very quickly, this is something else that I don't really know if there's much point to it. I did it a couple of times. Actually, because when we were using the new RAN, the Sysmo BTS 2100, compiling stuff for that was just kind of easier to do it on the, well, actually, it was Raphael's fault. Gave me this idea was just to install a Debian ARM EL system locally. You know, then NFS mount that from the Sysmo BTS to get access to run Debian on the Sysmo BTS. I sometimes when I was playing around with things, I'm missing certain commands in the what's it called, Yocto Linux that runs on the Sysmo BTS. I even tried compiling stuff on it once, just. It works, you know. I'm not sure if there was any like possible CPU optimization for actually compiling on the CPU that is going to run the program as opposed to cross-compiling it. But, you know, I was just experimenting with that stuff, so that was something that I was doing, and I made, you know, making a mess with different libraries and stuff, and then you have access to commands like LDD to see like which, you know, you just have Debian on the Sysmo BTS. So that, those are to my two tips. Would love to know if what other people are doing with stats. If there's comments on that.
So where do the RRD files fall out from? Did you mention it in the beginning? Did I miss that? Or
do you just have the stats files there? Or like how do you get the stats that you want to see in the first place?
So I just basically apt install collect D, and I think there's a collect D conf which I think pretty much didn't. I mean, I did modify it, but what did we have to do?
So maybe basically, if in case it's not well known, collect D is this. Old school, but very useful daemon for collecting all kinds of metrics, and it has a statsd importer basically, so you can send the statsd stuff from OsmoCom into collectd, and collectd then will automatically create RRD files for all of the metrics that you feed into it. That's basically it. And then there is a separate, I think this UI panel that you made is a separate project. It's not part of collectd. Collectd doesn't have any user interface, as far as I know. which coincidentally it's an old acquaintance of mine who wrote that from Nuremberg back in the day, also doing very early internet stuff in the 90s.
Yeah, so I mean, I think all you need to do to collect dconf is make sure you're loading the statsd plugin, and then there's a statsd connect configuration section somewhere.
You just leak the password.
Really?
Yeah.
Where?
I'm sure it's important.
It's not mine.
Comment it out.
Where is it? This one? Secret?
No, it was real.
My password.
My password? Oh. I don't think there's any password that I wrote into this collect D file. Anyway, there's a statsd config there section somewhere, and I think it's just a case of uncommenting it. This stats plugin statsd, yeah, so you set the host and the port. And then you just get all the RRD files.
And this is the listen host, or is that like the remote?
Yeah, it's the listen host, yeah. Because then in the
sends it there.
Yeah, I mean in
just to repeat what I said, this config sets the listen address, and then our Osmocom programs statsd thing sends the stats there, right?
Yeah. Oh, look at that. Can you see what?
One of the RRD files.
Pau asked for the RRD file format.
What did you want to see?
It's fine.
Okay. Yeah, so that's all, I think.
I just thought in the meantime, we talked about the VTY update. But we also, of course, have lots of update EXP targets for the normal regression tests.
You have to update sometimes when having new tests.
What? Of course, adding new tests, you have to make sure this update expectation target is also updated to include that.
I wanted to respond to Keith's question, what people do for stats. I guess it's the wrong couple of people here. I know what all kinds of various ISMO customers are doing, but they're all not here. I mean, people running this professionally somewhere in a real-world deployment. So, but it's usually something completely custom. But it's not the right group of people, I guess, here to ask the question.
I just wanted to mention for the people using Prometheus, so one of the Grafana databases, there's a statsd exporter for Prometheus directly, which interfaces very nicely with all the Osmocom tools and will automatically just log all the data.
The problem with Prometheus and the way how we export stats is that you need to do lots of rewriting to get to meaningful names. There's an Osmocom org issue. I don't remember the ticket number now, but where I explored this and I ended up with probably several hundred handwritten rewrite rules for the names to transform the way how the names of the statsd counters with the index, like, you know, you have 10 different links in an STP or something, to translate that into attributes, whatever the key value thing is called in Prometheus, that you can then meaningfully generate graphs in Grafana or something like this. So I think it's not that bad, because you only need to write that once. It's just that I never completed it. Maybe we should put that as part of the respective Osmocom program.
Judging by how easy the Prometheus protocol itself is, just like plain text HTTP responses, maybe we should think about just integrating it as a first-party API.
philosophically, I don't like the idea of putting that burden into the program itself, because I mean we run on tightly embedded, like in Sysmo BTS, for example, we run in this ARM926 EJS core that has to do lots of things with real-time requirements. So writing a fire and forget UDP packet, I think, is the much less load than somebody at some non-deterministic interval connecting over HTTP and requesting a whole bunch, a lot of data that sort of distracts the process from doing other things.
Fair.
Yeah, Influx could maybe help there. The protocol which is Influx using is a little bit different.
I mean, just to say that is a... I know there's lots of other ways it can be done. That is just like super quick 5 minutes if you want to.
Yeah, if it helps also with all examples. For instance, when I'm using Cosmo Modbus to basically gather information from the solar inverter, I've been running that for like 2-3 years, and I basically have my own Osmocom-based program based on Osmo Modbus, which basically takes information, sends it over StatsD, and then I have the StatsD daemon actually loading the extension for MariaDB, and yeah, I'm submitting everything to MariaDB. Yeah, I know it's shit, but I had that in place already, so I'm just reusing that, and I've been just pushing stuff to a MariaDB for, I don't know, like 2-3 years already, and yeah, it's on a one core BPS, 1 gigabyte. I need to restart MariaDB from time to time because it's eating all the memory, but it's enough for my ongoing needs. Yeah, just sharing some other, like, it can be done. I'm not saying it should be done that way, but...
What's that? Modbus? What?
Yeah, well, I mean, it was one of the proposals. I may do it maybe next time. Just like, I already had like 4 talks and yeah, it's fine.
Just 2 words, what is it?
I think Paul gave a talk on Osmo Modbus before.
Yes.
No, I'm quite sure you gave a talk about it at some point.
Yeah, right.
Yes, like many years ago. So it, well, Modbus is an automated, well, a bus system used in automation and industrial control. And Paul wrote an implementation of it based on libosmocore primitives and MSGBs and so on. So it's not used in any of the like actual Osmocom programs, but it's, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, quickly, just implemented like really the really small stuff around. So I didn't implement everything in Modbus, just like the few bits I needed, just to like the commands to get some info from from several devices. So basically, there's registers and you can read and write on them, and that's how usually. So I basically have that connected to the solar inverter, which I bought looking for a Modbus based one. And then I also bought like a different electricity meter, which I put on like the main panel at home, and it's also Modbus based, so I can just gather information like on going in or going out electricity, and then the one actually being generated by the inverter. So you have like both sides, and yeah, you just get that, and yeah, reusing Osmocom libraries, it just sends. That's the good enough.
So heat pumps and probably modern gas furnaces also tend to support that. So it's like a home automation protocol for infrastructure.
So the main problem, as usually, of course, is getting the right registers and all that. In my case, it was a Chinese inverter. I just asked them, and they just sent me a full PDF with tons of stuff. So, yeah.
Another very common device using Modbus are these little nice DPS power supplies, the Chinese bench power supplies. They can do Modbus over RS-232, and then you can control voltages, current, and everything.
Okay, then unless we have more tips, then I would close the talk. So thanks everybody for sharing the additional tips. It was very interesting. Ah, there's one more.
I forgot to say that I wanted, I think I just remembered that the reason why I started doing that NFS mount on the Sysmo BTS was that I wanted to run Valgrind, or run Osmo PCO under Valgrind, but of course the CPU doesn't support Valgrind, which I didn't find out until I did everything else. But I don't, you can of course compile it with the, what's it called? The
sanitizer,
yeah, which is as good, right? But I don't know if there's any other tips that people would have about working with those BTSs in terms of debugging the process, because it's not always that easy. You don't have so much CPU to do things with, or RAM, or